Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run, with special guest host Chris Ronji. Sunday mornings from 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score.
Here's the pitch, drilled in the air, trouble deep left center, all the way back and gone for a home run. And the Marlins have taken a 3-2 lead. As I look at the flags, they are not blowing the way they have been almost all day. De La Cruz with a home run and Miami with their first lead of the day. It is 3-2 here in the ninth inning. Ball game on the line. The pitch. Nico hits a ground ball to first base, fielded by Arraez, steps on the bag, and the Marlins win the ball game. Nico grounds out to first, three unassisted. The Cubs threaten in the ninth inning, but fail to tie or take the leads.
With one down, Corey Lee to the right side, and there's the first hit of the game for the White Sox. Zach Wheeler's no-hitter is broken up here in the eighth.
Wheeler will get a standing ovation, and deservedly so. And now it takes a whole lot of pressure off Rob Thompson. Not worry about taking a guy out of a no-hitter, and this one just gets by Harper.
What a scene here in Philadelphia. Two outs. And Benintendi, it is gobbled up by Harper, and that'll do it. White Sox score five, but it's the Phillies with a 9-5 win. They take game two, and they win this three-game series.
And the pitch.
Line drive, base hit to left center field. One run is in. Morrell heading to the plate. The throw by De La Cruz. Cut off. And down to second goes Bush, and he's safe there. Cubs take a 4-3 lead. Michael Bush delivers a clutch two-run single.
Now the 1-2 from Neris.
Swing and a miss, and the Cubs win. He struck out the pinch batter, Nick Gordon. He was fooled badly on a change of pace. The pitch was way low and outside. Gordon is gone, the Marlins are done, and the Cubs have split this long day-night doubleheader with a 5-3 win here at Wrigley.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I'm Chris Ronji, filling in for Matt Spiegel. We have Cubs baseball coming up this afternoon, so we're going to lead you right up into the pregame show. 12:45, obviously, pregame show will get started, and then the Cubs at Wrigley Field will finish up the series against the Florida Miami Marlins. They will hope for a series victory here. Right now, they lead the series after splitting the doubleheader yesterday, winning on Friday. Of course, the rainout happened on Thursday, so now is the opportunity to take 3 of 4 from the visiting Marlins, a team that is not very good. So they should be able to do that this afternoon. It is good to have you with us today. You've got the phone number to visit, 312 312- 844-67-67. You, of course, can follow the station on Twitter at 670thescore. We hope you do that. You can follow me as well. If you want to tweet at me, I am welcome. I'm open to you. Here you go. Here it is, at Chris Ranji. And, you know, you can text that number I gave you, too. That's right, 312-644-6767. You heard some highlights from yesterday. The Cubs splitting that doubleheader. It was a split doubleheader, a day-night. And they had the lead in the ninth inning in Game 1, which we're going to get to in just a minute. But they split the doubleheader yesterday. The White Sox were, and I will be honest with you, I gave up on that ball game in the eighth inning. I was watching up until the point where I thought maybe Zach Wheeler was going to throw a no-hitter, or maybe the Phillies would do one of those combined no-hitter things. I thought that might happen, but they did carry the no-hitter into the eighth inning. They broke it up, and then the Sox showed a little bit of life, which was nice to see in the top of the ninth inning, scoring those five runs, but not nearly good enough as the Phillies win again. And the White Sox record, I don't want to tell you. Sean Sears, should I tell them or not?
Oh, I don't know. Is it early? It's kind of early. Let's let them live in a moment where it might be better than what it is.
No, they're 3-17. It's 3-17.
That was the right call. Rip the Band-Aid off. Rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not very good. Yeah, the White Sox are 3-17 on the season. So, hey, you're welcome to, if you have thoughts on them, you are welcome to send them my way. You know how much I love those White Sox thoughts. But primarily today, we really want to focus on what the Cubs are doing and where they are right now. As I mentioned, they split the doubleheader yesterday. And it is, if you went into the doubleheader before it started, you would think, you know, I'll take a split. I know the Marlins stink, but I'm always willing to accept a doubleheader split. Because most of them, I think it's just something like 51% of doubleheaders end up being split. So, you know, I'll take that, right? You would have gone into it thinking, you know, they're dealing with some injuries. They've got some guys who are down. Saya's not available to them. Ian Happ was dealing with the hamstring thing. So, look, they're kind of piecing a bullpen together at this point. The rotation is not healthy quite yet. So I'll take a split doubleheader. But the manner in which they coughed up the first one is really difficult to accept. So that's that weird, and this happens all the time. Just think about series in general. You're always happy to take two of three in any series, because if you win two of every three games, that is a huge season. That's like a 100-win season, right? So you will take that anytime. But it's very difficult to accept when you have the lead late and you give it up. Those are the losses that are very difficult to take. And here I am talking about a team which, by the way, has 13 wins. This season has gotten off to a very good start. But it's difficult to look at the 13-8 record and not think, you know, conservatively, they should be 15-6. Conservatively, you could probably make the argument they should have 16 wins or maybe even 17. I wouldn't expect the 17, but if you have a 15-win season at this point of the year, I think you would take that. You'd be happy with that. You'd be thrilled with that. Yeah, hell, you should be thrilled with 13 wins right now. But it is the manner in which some of these losses have happened. Blowing the 8-run lead against San Diego. What happened against the Diamondbacks the other day. Then you've got this game yesterday, which was the first of a doubleheader. You take the lead into the ninth inning, and you blow that lead in the ninth. And again, the guy who was closing ball games for you has blown a save. And that makes now 4 on the season for Adbert Alzolay, which is very, very troubling. Because if, in fact, he is going to be your closer this season, you can't have that. That's 4 blown saves in April already. We've still got another week to go, plus. That's very, very troubling. So what do you do about that? That is maybe, other than this guy we're going to talk about in a moment, that is maybe the biggest question the Cubs have to answer right now. Here is Craig Counsell. This was after the Game 1 loss, and he's talking about what they need out of the guy who is currently closing games for them.
We need Adbert to get outs. You know, that's regardless of where it is, we need Adbert to be an effective member of the bullpen, and I strongly believe that he will be. You know, we need outs. You know, where they come in the game, you know, it obviously stings when it comes at the end of the game there, but we need outs, you know, and Adbert's going to get us big outs this year.
Yeah, and he's right, and I think he knows that, and he's going to give his closer, I think, at least a little bit more breathing room here just to make a decision on him moving forward. But it's those, you know, those 6-4 games that you lose where you lose it in the middle of the game. It's, you can accept those. You don't want them, but you know they're going to happen. It's not a big deal. There is something psychologically for fans, and let's be honest, for teams too. The players, they think about this stuff. You know, they're not robots. So when they cough up a lead late, they lose a ball game in the ninth inning, one that they have in hand, one that they have to set themselves up to sweep a doubleheader, and they lose it like that, it can be a problem. It does mean, not that the win or the loss means more statistically, because it doesn't, but psychologically there is something to taking a lead into the very last three outs and giving it up. And if it happens a time or two, no big deal. If it becomes a pattern, then it becomes a thing. And when something becomes a thing, it's always kind of there in the back of your mind. The coaches' minds, the players' minds, certainly the fans are thinking about it. And that's the kind of thing that the Cubs really want to avoid. So, Counsell's right. I think we can all see it. He's not, this is not news. They need him to be better. They need him to get outs. They can't have what happened in Game 1 yesterday. On the other hand, what I will say is the way they responded in Game 2 says a lot about them as a team, at least right now. Cody Bellinger giving them an early lead, scoring right away in the first inning. See, when you have a devastating loss, the way they had in Game 1 of the doubleheader, sometimes it's difficult to rebound. But they took a couple of hours, they reset, they came back out Game 2, immediately they get a lead, and they lose the lead. What do they do? They come right back in the sixth inning and they score four and they take the lead right back. That is a terrific thing to have happen. So you have these opposing feelings of, man, you can't lose that game. You cannot lose a game in the ninth inning. Not if you are a division winning team. Not if you're a team that actually has realistic playoff hopes. You can't lose games like that. But also, on the other hand, the way they responded in Game 2 to beat the Marlins 5-3, that is exactly what you need from a team like that. Now, so I've been trying to think of words that describe the Cubs in 2024. And there are a million different adjectives you can use right now. But there are two that I think about the most, and they're not necessarily exclusive ideas because both things can be true at once. But the two words that I use in thinking about this team this year is resilient and concerning. Those are the two words that I keep thinking about the most. They are very clearly a resilient team, but there are also a lot of very concerning elements to it. So I would like to hear from you today. You tell me what word, and tell me why that word does it for you, is the one that describes the 2024 Cubs, at least through the first three or so weeks of the season. 312-644-6767. You can visit with me via text. You can call that number if you like. Whatever it is you do, I just want to hear from you. also, and when we come back, this is going to be, I think, the biggest question the Cubs are facing right now. With Justin Steele throwing a live bullpen session today, at least he is scheduled to throw a live bullpen session, with that happening today, with the rotation starting to take form, starting to find themselves healthier, with guys coming back, there are decisions to be made. What's happening today at Wrigley Field is going to be what I think the biggest start of the season up till now. And again, it's not very deep into the year. It's only 3 weeks in. But still, you can find storylines. And this is one of them. And this is probably the biggest storyline so far. What do they do with Kyle Hendricks? He's going to get the start today. This is, I believe, a very big start for him. But what do they do moving forward if he's bad today? We're not used to seeing him with an ERA over 12, but that's where it is right now. What do the Cubs do if he has a terrible day today at Wrigley Field? I think this is the most important question the team faces. You can say it's the closer situation. I think this is it right here. Because they do have options. Are they better options ultimately? That really is the question. We're going to talk about Kyle Hendricks when we come back. We'll talk about the closer situation as well. You tell me which is the bigger deal for this team right now. Let me know. 312-644-6767. And if you have a better adjective for the 2024 Cubs than resilient and or concerning, please let me know what that is as well. You've got the phone number. I'm Chris Ranji. Sean Sears is producing the show today. We will be talking with, we're scheduled to talk with Mark Leiter Jr., who is having a terrific year out of the bullpen for the Cubs. He's coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Prior to that, Paul Sullivan of the Tribune will join us. Carlos Pena from Marquee Sports Network. We've got Craig Mish, who covers the Marlins. Sahadev Sharma is going to join the show. We are loaded. We are packed. We are talking Chicago baseball with you. I'm Chris Ranji, filling in for Spiegs. This is Hit and Run.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying.
It's really important for us to, you know, to have him be a big part of the rotation. I don't think there's any question. Obviously, the Steele's injury, game one, tested us. You know, with Talion already out, and I think we've, you know, the young guys have come up and sort of they've done a really good job. But like, we're gonna have more injuries. We're gonna have more things happen during the course of the season. We have more doubleheaders, and you know, we're gonna need everyone to be able to pitch in. So I think it is really important to get Kyle right.
That is Jed Hoyer with Parkinson Spiegel this week on 670 The Score. Chris Ranji filling in for Matt Spiegel this morning and into the afternoon. The Cubs pregame show today gets started at 12:45. It'll be Zach Zaidman and Ryan Dempster on the call this afternoon from Wrigley as the Cubs try to take 3 of 4 from the visiting Marlins. You've got the phone number to join us, 312-644-6767. So Jed Hoyer, you heard there. They are giving a lot of, I think, leeway and reverence to a pitcher who deserves it. The question is just how much of it does Hendricks deserve? Because these games, while it is still very early in the season, and the Cubs are in very good position in the division as it starts right now. Today's game starts today. They're one game out, right? And he is going to get the start against the Marlins this afternoon. It has not been good. It's been, in fact, really bad. And you hate to see that, especially with somebody like him, somebody who has been so important to the team, somebody who is extremely likable and has been so important to what the Cubs are, with the exception of a down year a couple of years ago and then what's happening this year. it's been rough for him, but otherwise it's been really good. And because of that, he is getting that leeway. He's getting that reverence from the organization. And I think he's earned that up until this point. The problem is these games do count right now. I don't think they are as crucial as the games in September. And you hear this all the time. Hey, a game in April counts just as much as one in September. And while that is true, you can still make up later in the year, or I'm sorry, early on, losses, bad losses, like the 8-0 game against San Diego, where they blew that, and the game yesterday, game one, where they blew that one in the ninth inning. Those are more devastating in September than they are in April. You can overcome them more easily the earlier in the year they happen. You just can't have them happen very often. So what the Cubs are doing, I think, is right, at least up until this point, giving Hendricks the opportunity to pitch today and prove that whatever the issue is, if it's not an injury, and it doesn't sound like that's what the situation is, they've been talking, and Jed Hoyer yesterday said that it could be delivery issues, that they are working on some things. So hopefully that's the case. Hopefully it is just something technical that he can figure out. And if that happens to be the issue and it can be resolved, then you're in great position, because now you have more options than, I wouldn't say more options than you need, but you're in a position of strength when it comes to the rotation then, because you do have other options as well, if he's good. So we'll see what happens today. But I think it's the right thing, at least for today, to give him that opportunity and see what comes of it. The question is, if he fails today, if he's bad, or how good does he have to be in your mind to stay in the rotation? What if he's just okay? Do you see that as progress and think, okay, well, here's a step in the right direction. Let's see what happens 5 days from now. I would lean toward that if he's just okay. Certainly if he's good today, he maintains his place. But if he gets shelled this afternoon at Wrigley, what do you do? Do you move on from him now? And if you move on from him now, who takes that job? I'm going to hear from you. 312-644-6767. Let's visit with, let's talk to Larry, who is in South Bend and is with us now on The Score. Good morning, Larry.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Doing okay.
Yeah. It's hard with Hendricks because everybody loves Kyle. Every Cubs fan loves Kyle Hendricks, and we all want to see him do well. He's got to give you 5 innings today. And, you know, the thing that I've noticed with Hendricks, and we all know, you know, he's not overpowering. These young hitters, they sit on that 88-mile-an-hour fastball. They know when it's coming. And if he can't figure it out today, the Cubs management has got to figure it out, in the sense that I was telling your producer, what saved Kerry Wood at the end of his career? He was a really good relief pitcher, got the Yankees into the playoffs that particular year. But if you put Hendricks in the bullpen, let him chew up some innings, I think he's man enough to go in there. You know, if you're getting shelled, bring him in, let him try to figure it out that way. Yeah, and that's, you know, you've got some young arms that can take his place in the starting rotation, but he's going to get a lot of love today, and people are going to really back him up. But if he does get shelled, you got to move on, put him in the bullpen, let him be a middle reliever, maybe in select situations, second games of doubleheaders, rainouts that have to be made up, this sort of thing. But there's a spot for him. And he can still get guys out. He's smart enough to do that. But young hitters, they know what's coming from him.
Well, whatever happens, and Larry, appreciate the phone call. Whatever it is, it's not going to be late inning relief work. And honestly, I have a very difficult time thinking the bullpen is where he goes, even if he's an innings eater, bridge guy, or something like that. He's not that type of pitcher. So I would be I don't know what to do with him, to be perfectly honest with you. And I know this is a cop-out answer. It's not a great answer. But I really don't know what to do with somebody like this, because you're not going to dump him outright at this point, are you?
You would think not, right? He was the only guy that signed the extensions out of all those guys that everyone thought they were going to try and keep. Like Jed Hoyer's talked about how like Kyle Hendricks has been like his favorite player to work with, but I think at the same time, like, if he can't make it as a starter, it's like you said, like, is he going to piggyback Jordan Wicks starts? Like, you're going to give Kyle Hendricks,
it
like,
could be that,
you know, and is that a role? Is that a big enough role to keep him on the roster in the bullpen? Like, is what does he do?
That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
Here's what concerns me. If you think he's that bad that he can't start, don't you feel pretty uneasy about him being even the piggyback guy? Because let's say it's Wicks who starts for you and he gives you four innings, whatever it is. And now it's Hendricks' turn to come in and give you two. Do you feel good about those two? If you think if he's not effective at all, he really doesn't have a place on the roster.
Right.
So that's why it's so difficult to handle him. But they have to do what they have to do. They've got to win games.
Yeah.
You're trying to balance treating a veteran who's been so important to your organization right, but also living for the now and realizing we have to win games now and we can't keep costing ourselves.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. That's really kind of the situation you're in. And the reality is like you said, like, he's a guy you want to bring in Ben Brown to come in afterwards, because he's a change of pace. Like, now it's, you know, high velocity. All of a sudden, if Ben Brown's getting hit, and then it's like, here comes Kyle Hendricks with 83 and 87. Like, that's not going to be – it doesn't work that way. You can't necessarily speed a bat up. If anything, you're just going to get hit. So now you start to wonder, like, what role does this guy fit? So you're right.
Let's take another phone call here. Let's talk to Kevin, who is in Plainfield and with us on The Score. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. I had a question on the first game of the doubleheader when Craig Counsell decided to stick with Canario on the final inning with a person on third and second. I thought maybe he'd go to Bellinger in that situation. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on why you think he didn't.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of us thought the exact same thing at the time. Yesterday's game one loss is not on Canario. It isn't. They shouldn't have been in the position in the first place. They should have locked down the win, right? What Kevin is talking about, if you missed the game yesterday, is right after the Cubs blew the lead and Alzolay gave up the home run, they did threaten in the bottom of the ninth inning. In fact, they got the potential game-winning run at second base with one out after advancing the runners on a bunt, and here came Canario. I am not blaming him for the loss, but I think that it deserves a little bit of criticism, and I understand this is his game, that he is a all-out, swing hard, try to hit it as hard as possible. I get that's who he is. But in a situation like that where a ball in play is going to get you the tying run, probably, because that's probably what's going to happen. If you put the ball fair in play, there's a high likelihood you at least tie the game. You can't swing so hard your helmet falls off. When you're two strikes, you can't do that. And it's some baseball awareness. And I realize we're not talking about a 35-year-old player here. But you cannot swing so hard your helmet flies off like your Bartolo Colon. You make contact. And it's a situational hitting thing. And I realize that's not his game, which is probably what leads us to the question, well, if that's not who he is, why did they leave him in? Why not go to Bellinger? And I get it. And I don't really have an answer for you. But I think Canario needs to know, and hopefully somebody did say to him after the fact, hey, that's the kind of moment where you're not trying to park one on the street. That's the kind of moment where you're trying to make contact, because contact will help us tie this game and potentially win it. You've got to be situationally aware. Again, yesterday's game one loss is not on him, but he's a small part of it, and he deserves the criticism because that's the kind of thing that down the line this season, if he learns from it, it could end up helping them win a game or two. That if he does realize, oh, maybe I shouldn't swing as hard as possible with two strikes and the tying run at third. Yeah, that's what I should do. Maybe it will help them down the road. So hopefully yesterday in that spot was a learning situation for him. I mean, he might just be who he is, but it would be nice if he figures that out. Can't have that. Cannot have that. That was really rough. I mentioned we're going to talk to Mark Leiter Jr., who is having a fantastic season out of the bullpen, at least so far here in the month of April. He will join us in the next hour. But when we come back, my guy, Paul Sullivan, covers Chicago sports for the Chicago Tribune. He joins us next here on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
Here's the next pitch. Swing and a miss, and Anderson is out on strikes. A strikeout for Shota, his fifth in the game.
So far for the Cubs, Shota Imanaga has been terrific. An ERA of .84 this season for a Cubs rotation that has just not given as many innings as they need. Just in total, and part of that is Kyle Hendricks. We have been talking about him a bit this morning already. It is Hit and Run. I'm Chris Ranji. Glad you are with us today. And it is time to go to the guest line. Joining us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resorts and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, is Paul Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune. Hello, old friend.
Hey, Ranj. How are you doing?
What do you know?
Welcome home.
I'm good, man. Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you. I'm happy to talk a little bit of baseball. You were at the doubleheader yesterday. And before we get to the big story, which was Kyle Hendricks, or at least what we have been talking about so far today, that first game, just the doubleheader in total, you'll take a doubleheader split. You know, you'd like to sweep, fine. But a doubleheader split is fine. It's a little tougher to take, though, when the manner in which you lose the first one is in the ninth inning on a home run when you're about to seal a win.
Yeah, definitely, especially given what happened on the road trip with the San Diego game where they had a huge lead and blew that one, and the Arizona game where they had the great comeback on the Ian's Grand Slam and then frittered that one away. So, you know, you don't want to get into the trend of having your closer blow all these games at the start of the season, and now it's a storyline because you know, Adbert was really good last year and he's off to a, you know, Council said he's not struggling, and you look at his numbers are not horrible, but he's given up four home runs and in crucial situations, and obviously that's not good. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles them. He's got Neris there. And I think Leiter can handle the ninth innings, too. So, you know, we'll just see what happens.
So, yeah, what do they do? In your opinion with him, does he continue to get opportunities here? Because four blown saves at this point of the year, that's far worse than what he's done in the past.
Yeah, obviously he's only been a closer for, you know, less than one full season. Last year, Ross gave him the shot, and he did a great job. And when you think about it down the stretch, when they came back from that huge deficit that they put themselves into in June, it was really Adbert and Leiter and Julian Merriweather who, you know, solidified the back end of the bullpen and really got them back in it. So, you know, I don't think they'll give up on him this quickly, but certainly, you know, you've got two other guys that can do it, I would think. And, you know, I think Council has got to explore all of his options at this point.
Let's talk about Kyle Hendricks, and this is a very big start for him. I don't know that, Paul, they have put everything on this start like if he's not really good today or if he's not at least okay, then we're going to make some kind of move here. But could it be that? Could it be that if he gets roughed up again today, that maybe they do something drastic?
Certainly, yes. This is the one thing that I appreciate from counsel is he's not downplaying this. He could just say that, well, you know, look at Kyle's track record. He's gotten off to poor starts in April and March and April before, and he's always rebounded. And the same with Jed. Neither of them, they both had the opportunity to make excuses or to downplay the situation, and both of them said this weekend that this is, you know, Kyle's got to come out of it. He can't pitch like this and for the Cubs to be successful. What you do with him, I really don't know, because he doesn't really seem like a short inning bullpen guy. And, you know, back in the day, if a guy was struggling in the rotation, you make him a long man, but they don't really have long men anymore in baseball, in bullpens. So I don't know. It's, I hate to think the worst, but I don't know what you do with him if he can't come out of this. And like you said earlier, he's really a beloved figure in Chicago, you know, the last man standing from the 2016 champions, nicest guy in the world. Everyone loves him. Everyone wants him to succeed. But if he's not succeeding, then, you know, this is a business and you've got to figure out what to do.
And the Cubs right now don't seem to be an organization that will continue to pound their heads against the wall if something's not working. They're not going to keep trying it. It at least that's my impression of them. Do you feel like they are more proactive?
Well, yeah, especially Jed. I mean, look what he did with Jason Hayward. They just basically buried him at the last half of his contract in Chicago. I can't remember what the injury was, but they just said, okay, he's not coming back. And, you know, they said he's not coming back after the season. This must've been in, I don't know, July, early August, but, and they talked to Jason about it and everything was cool. And he understood. And, I think Jed handled that situation about as well as you can. I think he's really different than Theo. I always wanted to see what he would be like in like the number one position, and he's way different. I think he's way more cutthroat. We can see that with the big sell-off that he did when he couldn't come to any contract, negotiations with all the stars. He just traded them all. You can see that what he did with David Ross, you know, another beloved figure from the 2016 team. He just cut him loose and hired Craig Counsell. So I think he's a very much a business first kind of guy, and I wouldn't be surprised at anything that he does.
Paul Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune is with us here on 670 The Score. So we look at the Cubs now, and I said this earlier, at 13-8, you could make the conservative case they should have at least 15 wins, but 13-8 is pretty good. It's pretty good.
It's very good. Yes.
Yeah. So knowing all of what we know, Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like knowing all of that. Hey, you would take 13-8, but also there are a couple of games in there they should have. How do you balance that? Those feelings.
Well, that's everyone's got to balance it in their own minds the way they look at it. I mean, it's like I said today or in tomorrow's. I guess it was online, but it wasn't in the paper. It's kind of a half glass full situation. 13-8, you'll take that, especially since they've played the majority of their games on the road. A really long road trip to start off, and you know, starting the season in Texas against the defending champs. Playing in some really brutal weather in Chicago in the first homestand, and last night was really freezing. I don't know if anyone was out there, but you can attest to that. But it was as cold as I can remember. So they have had some difficult playing situations and road conditions, and their 13-8 is really, you know, pretty good. But like you said, you know, for those blown saves by Adbert, you know, you're going to get a blown save every now and then, but let's say he could have blown one of them, but they should have won three of those games. And then they'd be like, they'd have 16 wins and five losses. And then they'd be talked about as, you know, one of the best teams in baseball right now. But, you know, it's April, and I think people tend to make a lot of, you know, judgments in April that probably are premature. You look at the Dodgers, they're like about 500 now, and they spent $1 billion in the off season. And so, you know, are their fans panicking? Probably, because that's what fans do in April. But we saw last year what happened. And I think the good part, if you're a fan of the Cubs, is knowing that most of these players were on the team last year when they came back from 10 games under and at least got into contention down the stretch for a wild card. And I think so they, like you said, they're a very resilient team. They've come back after each of the really heartbreaking losses this year and won, including last night's game. So I think in the big picture, things bode well, but it could be better.
How aggressive do you think they would be in terms of making trades? We're still in April with about a week plus to go here, week and a half. So I can't see any significant movement happening anytime soon. But if they're if they're close and we're way before the deadline, how aggressive would they be?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like teams make any big trades until July anymore. It used to be, you know, back in the day, you can get a Rick Sutcliffe pretty early in the season and, you know, cruise from there. But it seems like everyone's likes to wait it out until the last minute. And certainly with the added wild card teams, more teams are going to be in contention just by default, basically, whether they're good or not. So, yeah, you know, you'd love to see the Cubs be aggressive and get a Michael Kopech. You know, the White Sox are definitely, well, I can't say definitely, but obviously should be trading that guy with the season they're having and his talent. I think he'd be great on the north side. And there's probably some other guys out there that would be good as well. You know, the Marlins are going to have a fire sale before long, too. But, you know, April, there's not too many teams that really start making big deals in April.
Paul, I think you're selling the White Sox short, because if they win their next 17, they'll be back to 500.
Well, this is true. And let's not forget, as Pedro pointed out last night, they did score five runs in the night.
That's right. Hey, that ain't nothing to sneeze at.
You know, yeah, they've almost been no hit twice in a row, but they scored five runs in the ninth inning, and they're almost to 200. And they're playing the Twins this week, and the Twins are under 200 too, so that should be quite a thrilling series there.
I will say this. I gave up on the game. I watched up until the point where they got the first hit in the eighth inning, and I thought, okay, they broke up the no-hitter. And they'll just probably get shut out. I was stunned when I looked the next today and saw that they scored five runs in the ninth. I was impressed.
Yeah, well, Philly put in a pitcher that obviously just needed the work, and then they refused to take him out. And then they finally had to take him out. So, I mean, I think that was just a matter of let's give this guy some work. And then they're like, oh, no, wait a minute. But, you know, it is a long season and everything, but I don't know what hope White Sox fans would have looking at this lineup and without Luis Robert coming back, you know, until around the All-Star break. You got to wonder how long Pedro is going to survive.
Paul, going back to the Cubs rotation, and I know we talked about this a little bit, but there have been some younger guys who have contributed in a big way. Javier Assad clearly has been good. Jordan Wicks has been good. You know, you always love to have lefties in a rotation when you can. Who, if they do, or, you know, Ben Brown too, if they do end up making a move of those three guys, how would you line that up in terms of holding or taking Hendricks' spot if they did make a drastic move like that, or who would be in the bullpen? What would you do with the three of them?
Well, I definitely would give Brown a shot in the rotation. I think Assad is a cinch to be in the rotation the rest of the year, the way he's been pitching. Jordan, he's the one guy that could probably work either way in the bullpen or in the rotation. And, you know, let's not forget Justin Steele's coming back soon. He's, you know, throwing a I think, a sim game today, and he'll start his rehab sometime this week. So maybe, I don't know, two starts, three starts. I don't know how long they'll let him go, but he'll be back. So I think rotation-wise, they have more depth than I can ever remember for a Cubs team, you know, just with the youth. I think the bullpen is really just the issue right now, what they're going to do with Merriweather out, because, you know, it was really strange because he's such a quiet guy and unassuming, and you kind of almost don't even notice how good he is. Then now that he's gone, you know, it's a really integral piece of the late inning, you know, puzzle that they're missing. And it's going to be up to council to figure it out. And like I said in the story today, you know, he had pretty easy up in Milwaukee with Hader and Devin Williams for all those years. And now he's got some really big decisions to make.
Paul Sullivan, I always love talking baseball with you. Thank you for taking time today to talk with me. I know it was a long day for you at the ballpark, so I appreciate you being with me today.
Anytime, Raj.
Anytime? You mean that? Anytime?
Anytime. Well, now that you're back in Chicago, are you back for good, or what's the deal?
You know, I'm just filling in. I'm just helping out Matt Spiegel. Must be. Is Spiegs doing pregame today?
No, he's got other things going on this weekend.
Oh, he's got other things going on. Anyway, yeah.
Okay.
They said, hey,
well,
Spiegs,
I love going on your show in St. Louis, too. You still have that, right?
Oh, it's still going on, baby.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think you called me last year about the mysterious bullet shooting at Sox Park, as I recall.
You know,
some of the wacky theories.
I love that the biggest White Sox storylines are things like they want $1 billion from the state. Somebody got shot at the ballpark. Just really good stuff. Really good stuff nowadays.
All good. It's all good. Going to be a fun season.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, Ron. See you.
That is Paul Sullivan. He covers Chicago sports baseball for the Chicago Tribune, joining us on the show. Mark Leiter Jr. is scheduled to be with us in the next hour. He's a guy a lot of people want to see as closer. Well, we're going to talk things over with him. This is Hit and Run. I'm Chris Ronji. Thanks for listening to The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run, with special guest host Chris Ronji, Sunday mornings from 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score.
Here's the pitch, drilled in the air, trouble deep left center, all the way back and gone for a home run. And the Marlins have taken a 3-2 lead. As I look at the flags, they are not blowing the way they have been almost all day. De La Cruz with a home run and Miami with their first lead of the day. It is 3-2 here in the ninth inning. Ball game on the line. The pitch. Nico hits a ground ball to first base, fielded by Arise, steps on the bag, and the Marlins win the ball game. Nico grounds out to first, three unassisted. The Cubs threaten in the ninth inning, but fail to tie or take the leads.
With one down, Corey Lee to the right side, and there's the first hit of the game for the White Sox. Zach Wheeler's no-hitter is broken up here in the eighth.
Wheeler will get a standing ovation, and deservedly so. And now it takes a whole lot of pressure off Rob Thompson. not worry about taking a guy out of a no-hitter, and this one just gets by Harper.
What a scene here in Philadelphia. Two outs. And Benintendi, it is gobbled up by Harper, and that'll do it. White Sox score five, but it's the Phillies with a 9-5 win. They take game two, and they win this three-game series.
And the pitch.
Line drive, base hit to left center field. One run is in. Morrell heading to the plate. The throw by De La Cruz. Cut off. And down to second goes Bush, and he's safe there. Cubs take a 4-3 lead. Michael Bush delivers a clutch two-run single.
Now the 1-2 from Neris.
Swing and a miss, and the Cubs win. He struck out the pinch batter, Nick Gordon. He was fooled badly on a change of pace. The pitch was way low and outside. Gordon is gone, the Marlins are done, and the Cubs have split this long day-night doubleheader with a 5-3 win here at Wrigley.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I'm Chris Ranji, filling in for Matt Spiegel. We have Cubs baseball coming up this afternoon, so we're going to lead you right up into the pregame show. 12:45, obviously, pregame show will get started. And then the Cubs at Wrigley Field will finish up the series against the Florida-Miami Marlins. They will hope for a series victory here. Right now, they lead the series after splitting the doubleheader yesterday, winning on Friday. Of course, the rainout happened on Thursday, so now is the opportunity to take 3 of 4 from the visiting Marlins, a team that is not very good. So they should be able to do that this afternoon. It is good to have you with us today. You've got the phone number to visit, 312-644-6767. You, of course, can follow the station on Twitter at 670thescore. We hope you do that. You can follow me as well. If you want to tweet at me, I am welcome. I'm open to you. Here you go. Here it is, at Chris Ranji. And, you know, you can text that number I gave you too. That's right, 312-644-6767. You heard some highlights from yesterday, the Cubs splitting that doubleheader. It was a split doubleheader, a day-night, and they had the lead in the ninth inning in Game 1, which we're going to get to in just a minute, but they split the doubleheader yesterday. The White Sox were, and I will be honest with you, I gave up on that ball game in the eighth inning. I was watching up until the point where I thought maybe Zach Wheeler was going to throw a no-hitter, or maybe the Phillies would do one of those combined no-hitter things. I thought that might happen, but they did carry the no-hitter into the eighth inning. They broke it up, and then the Sox showed a little bit of life, which was nice to see in the top of the ninth inning, scoring those five runs, but not nearly good enough as the Phillies win again. And the White Sox record, I don't want to tell you. Sean Sears, should I tell them or not?
Oh, I don't know. Is it early? It's kind of early. Let's let them live in a moment where it might be better than what it is.
They're 3-17. It's 3-17.
That was the right call. Rip the Band-Aid off. Rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not very good. Yeah, the White Sox are 3-17 on the season. So, hey, you're welcome to, if you have thoughts on them, you are welcome to send them my way. You know how much I love those White Sox thoughts. But primarily today, we really want to focus on what the Cubs are doing and where they are right now. As I mentioned, they split the doubleheader yesterday. And it is, if you went into the doubleheader before it started, you would think, you know, I'll take a split. I know the Marlins stink, but I'm always willing to accept a doubleheader split. Because most of them, I think it's just something like 51% of doubleheaders end up being split. So, you know, I'll take that, right? You would have gone into it thinking, you know, they're dealing with some injuries. They've got some guys who are down. Seiya's not available to them. Ian Happ was dealing with the hamstring thing. So, look, they're kind of piecing a bullpen together at this point. The rotation is not healthy quite yet. So I'll take a split doubleheader. But the manner in which they coughed up the first one is really difficult to accept. So that's that weird, and this is this happens all the time. Just think about series in general. You're always happy to take two of three in any series, because if you win two of every three games, that is a huge season. That's like a 100-win season, right? So you will take that anytime. But it's very difficult to accept when you have the lead late and you give it up. Those are the losses that are very difficult to take. And here I am talking about a team which, by the way, has 13 wins. This season has gotten off to a very good start. But it's difficult to look at the 13-8 record and not think, you know, conservatively, they should be 15-6. Conservatively. You could probably make the argument they should have 16 wins or maybe even 17. I wouldn't expect the 17. But if you have a 15-win season at this point of the year, I think you would take that. You'd be happy with that. You'd be thrilled with that. Yeah, hell, you should be thrilled with 13 wins right now. But it is the manner in which some of these losses have happened. Blowing the 8-run lead against San Diego. What happened against the Diamondbacks the other day. Then you've got this game yesterday, which was the first of a doubleheader. You take the lead into the ninth inning, and you blow that lead in the ninth. And again, the guy who was closing ball games for you has blown a save. And that makes now 4 on the season for Adbert Alzolay, which is very, very troubling. Because if, in fact, he is going to be your closer this season, you can't have that. That's 4 blown saves in April already. We've still got another week to go, plus. That's very, very troubling. So what do you do about that? That is maybe, other than this guy we're going to talk about in a moment, that is maybe the biggest question the Cubs have to answer right now. Here is Craig Counsell. This was after the Game 1 loss, and he's talking about what they need out of the guy who is currently closing games for them.
We need Adbert to get outs. You know, that's regardless of where it is. We need Adbert to be an effective member of the bullpen, and I strongly believe that he will be. You know, we need outs. You know, where they come in the game. You know, it obviously stings when it comes at the end of the game there, but we need outs, you know, and Adbert's going to get us big outs this year.
Yeah, and he's right, and I think he knows that, and he's going to give his closer, I think, at least a little bit more breathing room here just to make a decision on him moving forward. But it's those, you know, those 6-4 games that you lose where you lose it in the middle of the game. It's, you can accept those. You don't want them, but you know they're going to happen. It's not a big deal. There is something psychologically for fans, and let's be honest, for teams too, the players, they think about this stuff. You know, they're not robots. So when they cough up a lead late, they lose a ball game in the ninth inning, one that they have in hand, one that they have to set themselves up to sweep a doubleheader, and they lose it like that, it can be a problem. It does mean, not that the win or the loss means more statistically, because it doesn't, but psychologically there is something to taking a lead into the very last 3 outs and giving it up. And if it happens a time or two, no big deal. If it becomes a pattern, then it becomes a thing. And when something becomes a thing, it's always kind of there in the back of your mind. The coaches' minds, the players' minds, certainly the fans are thinking about it. And that's the kind of thing that the Cubs really want to avoid. So, Counsell's right. I think we can all see it. This is not news. They need him to be better. They need him to get outs. They can't have what happened in Game 1 yesterday. On the other hand, what I will say is the way they responded in Game 2 says a lot about them as a team at least right now. Cody Bellinger giving them an early lead, scoring right away in the first inning. See, when you have a devastating loss, the way they had in game one of the doubleheader, sometimes it's difficult to rebound. But they took a couple of hours, they reset, they came back out game two, immediately they get a lead, and they lose the lead. What do? They come right back in the sixth inning and they score four and they take the lead right back. That is a terrific thing to have happen. So you have these opposing feelings of, man, you can't lose that game. You cannot lose a game in the ninth inning. Not if you are a division-winning team. Not if you're a team that actually has realistic playoff hopes. You can't lose games like that. But also, on the other hand, the way they responded in game two to beat the Marlins 5-3, that is exactly what you need from a team like that. Now, so I've been trying to think of words that describe the Cubs in 2024. And there are a million different adjectives you can use right now, but there are two that I think about the most. And they're not necessarily exclusive ideas, because both things can be true at once. But the two words that I use in thinking about this team this year is resilient and concerning. Those are the two words that I keep thinking about the most. They are very clearly a resilient team, but there are also a lot of very concerning elements to it. So I would like to hear from you today. You tell me. What word, and tell me why that word does it for you, is the one that describes the 2024 Cubs, at least through the first three or so weeks of the season? 312-644-6767. You can visit with me via text. You can call that number if you like. Whatever it is you do, I just want to hear from you. Also, and when we come back, this is going to be, I think, the maybe the biggest question the Cubs are facing right now. With Justin Steele throwing a live bullpen session today, at least he is scheduled to throw a live bullpen session, with that happening today, with the rotation starting to take form, starting to find themselves healthier, with guys coming back, there are decisions to be made. What's happening today at Wrigley Field is going to be what I think the biggest start of the season up till now. And again, it's not very deep into the year. It's only 3 weeks in. But still, you can find storylines. And this is one of them. And this is probably the biggest storyline so far. What do they do with Kyle Hendricks? He's going to get the start today. This is, I believe, a very big start for him. But what do they do moving forward if he's bad today? We're not used to seeing him with an ERA over 12, but that's where it is right now. What do the Cubs do if he has a terrible day today at Wrigley Field? I think this is the most important question the team faces. You can say it's the closer situation. I think this is it right here. Because they do have options. Are they better options ultimately? That really is the question. We're going to talk about Kyle Hendricks when we come back. We'll talk about the closer situation as well. You tell me which is the bigger deal for this team right now. Let me know. 312-644-6767. And if you have a better adjective for the 2024 Cubs than resilient and or concerning, please let me know what that is as well. You've got the phone number. I'm Chris Ranji. Sean Sears is producing the show today. We will be talking with, we're scheduled to talk with Mark Leiter Jr., who is having a terrific year out of the bullpen for the Cubs. He's coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Prior to that, Paul Sullivan of the Tribune will join us. Carlos Pena from Marquee Sports Network. We've got Craig Mish, who covers the Marlins. Sahadev Sharma is going to join the show. We are loaded. We are packed. We are talking Chicago baseball with you. I'm Chris Ranji, filling in for Spiegs. This is Hit and Run.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball!
On 670 The Score.
No crying!
It's really important for us to, you know, to have him be a big part of the rotation. I don't think there's any question. Obviously, the Steele's injury game one tested us, you know, with Talion already out. And I think we've, you know, the young guys have come up and sort of they've done a really good job. But, like, we're going to have more injuries. We're going to have more things happen during the course of the season. We have more doubleheaders. And, you know, we're going to need everyone to be able to pitch in. So I think it is really important that we get Kyle right.
That is Jed Hoyer with Parkins and Spiegel this week on 670 The Score. Chris Ranji filling in for Matt Spiegel this morning and into the afternoon. The Cubs pregame show today gets started at 12:45. It'll be Zach Zaidman and Ryan Dempster on the call this afternoon from Wrigley as the Cubs try to take 3 of 4 from the visiting Marlins. You've got the phone number to join us, 312-644-6767. So, Jed Hoyer, you heard there. They are giving a lot of, I think, leeway and reverence to a pitcher who deserves it. The question is just how much of it does Hendricks deserve? Because these games, while it is still very early in the season, and the Cubs are in very good position in the division, as it starts right now. Today's game starts today. They're one game out, right? And he is going to get the start against the Marlins this afternoon. It has not been good. It's been, in fact, really bad. And you hate to see that, especially with somebody like him, somebody who has been so important to the team, somebody who is extremely likable and has been so important to what the Cubs are, with the exception of a down year of a couple of years ago and then what's happening this year. It's been rough for him, but otherwise it's been really good. And because of that, he is getting that leeway. He's getting that reverence from the organization, and I think he's earned that up until this point. The problem is these games do count right now. I don't think they are as crucial as the games in September, and you hear this all the time, hey, a game in April counts just as much as one in September, and while that is true, you can still make up later in the year, early on, losses, bad losses, like the 8-0 game against San Diego, where they blew that, and the game yesterday, game one, where they blew that one in the 9th inning. Those are more devastating in September than they are in April. You can overcome them more easily the earlier in the year they happen. You just can't have them happen very often. So what the Cubs are doing, I think, is right, at least up until this point, giving Hendricks the opportunity to pitch today and prove that whatever the issue is, if it's not an injury, and it doesn't sound like that's what the situation is, they've been talking, and Jed Hoyer yesterday said that it could be delivery issues, that they are working on some things. So hopefully that's the case. Hopefully it is just something technical that he can figure out. And if that happens to be the issue and it can be resolved, then you're in great position, because now you have more options than, I wouldn't say more options than you need, but you're in a position of strength when it comes to the rotation then, because you do have other options as well, if he's good. So we'll see what happens today. But I think it's the right thing, at least for today, to give him that opportunity and see what comes of it. The question is, if he fails today, if he's bad, or how good does he have to be, in your mind, to stay in the rotation? What if he's just okay? Do you see that as progress and think, okay, well, here's a step in the right direction. Let's see what happens 5 days from now. I would lean toward that if he's just okay. Certainly if he's good today, he maintains his place. But if he gets shelled this afternoon at Wrigley, what do you do? Do you move on from him now? And if you move on from him now, who takes that job? I'm going to hear from you. 312-644-6767. Let's visit with, let's talk to Larry, who is in South Bend and is with us now on The Score. Good morning, Larry.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Doing okay.
Yeah. It's hard with Hendricks because everybody loves Kyle. Every Cubs fan loves Kyle Hendricks, and we all want to see him do well. He's got to give you five innings today. And, you know, the thing that I've noticed with Hendricks, and we all know, you know, he's not overpowering. These young hitters, they sit on that 88-mile-an-hour fastball. They know when it's coming. And if he can't figure it out today, the Cubs management has got to figure it out in the sense that I was telling your producer, what saved Kerry Wood at the end of his career? He was a really good relief pitcher, got the Yankees into the playoffs that particular year. But if you put Hendricks in the bullpen, let him chew up some innings, I think he's man enough to go in there. You know, if you're getting shelled, bring him in, let him try to figure it out that way. Yeah, and that's, you know, you've got some young arms that can take his place in the starting rotation. But he's going to get a lot of love today, and people are going to really back him up. But if he does get shelled, you got to move on, put him in the bullpen, let him be a middle reliever, maybe in select situations, second games of doubleheaders, rainouts that have to be made up, this sort of thing. But there's a spot for him, and he can still get guys out. He's smart enough to do that. But young hitters, they know what's coming from him.
Well, whatever happens, and Larry, appreciate the phone call, whatever it is, it's not going to be late inning relief work. And honestly, I have a very difficult time thinking the bullpen is where he goes, even if he's an innings eater, bridge guy or something like that. He doesn't have he's not that type of pitcher. So I don't know what to do with him, to be perfectly honest with you. And I know this is a cop-out answer. It's not a great answer. But I really don't know what to do with somebody like this, because you're not going to dump him outright at this point, are you?
You would think not, right? He was the only guy that signed the extensions out of all those guys that everyone thought they were going to try and keep. Like Jed Hoyer's talked about how like Kyle Hendricks has been like his favorite player to work with, but I think at the same time, like if he can't make it as a starter. So like you said, like, is he going to piggyback Jordan Wick starts? Like, you're going to give Kyle Hendricks.
It
like,
could be that.
You know, and is that a role? Is that a big enough role to keep him on the roster in the bullpen? Like, what does he do?
That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
What concerns me. If you think he's that bad that he can't start, don't you feel pretty uneasy about him being even the piggyback guy? Because let's say it's Wicks who starts for you and he gives you four innings, whatever it is. And now it's Hendricks' turn to come in and give you two. Do you feel good about those two? If you think if he's not effective at all, he really doesn't have a place on the roster.
Right.
So that's why it's so difficult to handle him. But they have to do what they have to do. They've got to win games.
Yeah,
you're trying to balance treating a veteran who's been so important to your organization right, but also living for the now and realizing we have to win games now and we can't keep costing ourselves.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. That's really kind of the situation you're in. And the reality is like you said, like he's a guy you want to bring in Ben Brown to come in afterwards because he's a change of pace. Like now it's, you know, high velocity. All of a sudden, if Ben Brown's getting hit, and then it's like here comes Kyle Hendricks with 83 and 87. Like that's not going to be – it doesn't work that way. You can't necessarily speed a bat up. If anything, you're just going to get hit. So now you start to wonder, like, what role is this guy fit? So you're right.
Sean, let's take another phone call here. Let's talk to Kevin, who is in Plainfield and with us on The Score. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. I had a question on the first game of the doubleheader when Craig Counsell decided to stick with Canario on the final inning with a person on third and second. I thought maybe he'd go to Bellinger in that situation. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on why you think he didn't.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of us thought the exact same thing at the time. I don't look. Yesterday's game one loss is not on Canario. It isn't. They shouldn't have been in the position in the first place. They should have locked down the win, right? What Kevin is talking about, if you missed the game yesterday, is right after the Cubs blew the lead and Alzolay gave up the home run, they did threaten in the bottom of the ninth inning. In fact, they got the game-winning, potential game-winning run at second base with one out after advancing the runners on a bunt, and here came Canario. I am not blaming him for the loss, but I think that it deserves a little bit of criticism, and I understand this is his game, that he is a all-out, swing hard, try to hit it as hard as possible. I get that's who he is. But in a situation like that where a ball in play is going to get you the tying run, probably, because that's probably what's going to happen. If you put the ball fair in play, there's a high likelihood you at least tie the game. You can't swing so hard your helmet falls off. When you're at two strikes, you can't do that. And it's some baseball awareness. And I realize we're not talking about a 35-year-old player here. But you cannot swing so hard your helmet flies off like your Bartolo Colon. You make contact. And it's a situational hitting thing. And I realize that's not his game, which is probably what leads us to the question, well, if that's not who he is, why did they leave him in? Why not go to Bellinger? And I get it. And I don't really have an answer for you. But I think Canario needs to know, and hopefully somebody did say to him after the fact, hey, that's the kind of moment where you're not trying to park one on the street. That's the kind of moment where you're trying to make contact, because contact will help us tie this game and potentially win it. You've got to be situationally aware. Again, yesterday's game one loss is not on him, but he's a small part of it, and he deserves the criticism, because that's the kind of thing that down the line this season, if he learns from it, it could end up helping them win a game or two. That if he does realize, oh, maybe I shouldn't swing as hard as possible with two strikes and the tying run at third. Yeah, that's what I should do. Maybe it will help them down the road. So hopefully yesterday in that spot was a learning situation for him. I mean, he might just be who he is, but it would be nice if he figures that out. Can't have that. Cannot have that. That was really rough. I mentioned we're going to talk to Mark Leiter Jr., who is having a fantastic season out of the bullpen, at least so far here in the month of April. He will join us in the next hour. But when we come back, my guy, Paul Sullivan, covers Chicago sports for the Chicago Tribune. He joins us next here on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
Here's the next pitch. Swing and a miss, and Anderson is out on strikes. A strikeout for Shota, his fifth in the game.
So far for the Cubs, Shota Imanaga has been terrific. An ERA of .84 this season for a Cubs rotation that has just not given as many innings as they need. Just in total, and part of that is Kyle Hendricks. We have been talking about him a bit this morning already. It is Hit and Run. I'm Chris Ranji. Glad you are with us today. And it is time to go to the guest line. Joining us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resorts and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, is Paul Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune. Hello, old friend.
Hey, Ranj. How you doing?
What do you know?
Welcome home.
I'm good, man. Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you. I'm happy to talk a little bit of baseball. You were at the doubleheader yesterday. And before we get to the big story, which is which was Kyle Hendricks, or at least what we have been talking about so far today, that first game, just the doubleheader in total, you'll take a doubleheader split. You know, you'd like to sweep, fine, but a doubleheader split is fine. It's a little tougher to take, though, when the manner in which you lose the first one is in the ninth inning on a home run when you're about to seal a win.
Yeah, definitely, especially given what happened on the road trip with the San Diego game where they had a huge lead and blew that one, and the Arizona game where they had the great comeback on the Ian's Grand Slam and then fritter that one away. So, you know, you don't want to get into the trend of having your closer blow all these games at the start of the season. And now it's a storyline because, you know, Adbert was really good last year and he's off to a, you know, Council said he's not struggling and you look at his numbers, they're not horrible, but he's given up four home runs and in crucial situations. And obviously that's not good. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles them. He's got Neris there. And I think Leiter can handle the ninth innings too. So, you know, we'll just see what happens.
So, yeah, what do they do? In your opinion with him, does he continue to get opportunities here? Because four blown saves at this point of the year, that's far worse than what he's done in the past.
Yeah, obviously he's only been a closer for, you know, less than one full season. Last year Ross gave him the shot and he did a great job. And when you think about it down the stretch, when they came back from that huge deficit that they put themselves into in June, it was really Adbert and Leiter and Julian Merriweather who, you know, solidified the back end of the bullpen and really got them back in it. So, you know, I don't think they'll give up on him this quickly, but certainly, you know, you've got two other guys that can do it, I would think. And, you know, I think Council has got to explore all of his options at this point.
Let's talk about Kyle Hendricks, and this is a very big start for him. I don't know that, Paul, they have put everything on this start. Like, if he's not really good today or if he's not at least okay, then we're going to make some kind of move here. But could it be that? Could it be that if he gets roughed up again today, that maybe they do something drastic?
Certainly, yes. You know, this is the one thing that I appreciate from Council is he's not downplaying this. You know, he could just say that, well, you know, look at Kyle's track record. He's gotten off to poor starts in April and March and April before, and he's always rebounded. And the same with Jed. Neither of them, they both had the opportunity to make excuses or to downplay the situation, and both of them said this weekend that this is, you know, Kyle's got to come out of it. He can't pitch like this and for the Cubs to be successful. You know, what you do with him, I really don't know, because he doesn't really seem like a short inning bullpen guy. And, you know, back in the day, you would, if a guy was struggling in the rotation, you know, make him a long man, but they don't really have long men anymore in baseball, in bullpens. So I don't know. It's, you know, I hate to think the worst, but I don't know what you do with him if he can't come out of this. And like you said earlier, he's really a beloved figure in Chicago. You know, the last man standing from the 2016 champions. Nicest guy in the world. Everyone loves him. Everyone wants him to succeed. But if he's not succeeding, then, you know, this is a business and you've got to figure out what to do.
And the Cubs right now don't seem to be an organization that will continue to pound their heads against the wall if something's not working. They're not going to keep trying it. It at least that's my impression of them. Do you feel like they are more proactive?
Well, yeah, especially Jed. I mean, look what he did with Jason Hayward. They just basically buried him at the last half of his you know, contract in Chicago. I can't remember what the injury was, but they just said, okay, he's not coming back. And, you know, they said he's not coming back after the season. This must have been in, I don't know, July, early August. But and they talked to Jason about it, and everything was cool, and he understood. And he really, I think Jed handled that situation about as well as you can. I think he's really different than Theo. I always wanted to see what he would be like in like the number one position, and he's way different. I think he's way more cutthroat. We can see that with the big sell-off that he did when he couldn't come to any contract, negotiations with all the stars. He just traded them all. You can see that what he did with David Ross, another beloved figure from the 2016 team. He just cut him loose and hired Craig Counsell. So I think he's a very much a business first kind of guy, and I wouldn't be surprised at anything that he does.
Paul Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune is with us here on 670 The Score. So we look at the Cubs now, and I said this earlier, at 13-8, you could make the conservative case they should have at least 15 wins, but 13-8 it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
It's very good, yes.
Yeah, so knowing all of what we know, Paul.
Yeah,
like knowing all of that. That, yeah. Hey, you would take 13-8, but also there are a couple of games in there they should have. How do you balance that those feelings?
Well, that's everyone's got to balance it in their own minds the way they look at it. I mean, it's like I said today or in tomorrow's, I guess it was online, but it wasn't in the paper. It's kind of a half glass full situation. 13-8, you'll take that, especially since they've played the majority of their games on the road. A really long road trip to start off, and starting the season in Texas against the defending champs, playing in some really brutal weather in Chicago in the first home stand, and last night was really freezing. I don't know if anyone was out there, but you can attest to that, but it was as cold as I can remember. So they have had some difficult playing situations and road conditions, and there's 13-8 is really pretty good. But like you said, four of those blown saves by Adbert, you're going to get a blown save every now and then, but let's say he could have blown one of them, but they should have won three of those games, and then they'd be like, they'd have 16 wins and five losses, and then they'd be talked about as, one of the best teams in baseball right now. But it's April, and I think people tend to make a lot of, judgments in April that probably are premature. You look at the Dodgers, they're like about 500 now, and they spent $1 billion in the offseason. And So, are their fans panicking? Probably, because that's what fans do in April. But we saw last year what happened, and I think the good part, if you're a fan of the Cubs, is knowing that most of these players were on the team last year when they came back from 10 games under and at least got into contention down the stretch for a wild card. And I think so they, like you said, they're a very resilient team. They've come back after each of the really heartbreaking losses this year and won, including last night's game. So I think in the big picture, things bode well, but it could be better.
How aggressive do you think they would be in terms of making trades? We're still in April with about a week plus to go here, week and a half. So I can't see any significant movement happening anytime soon, but if they're close and we're way before the deadline, how aggressive would they be?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like teams make any big trades until July anymore. It used to be, back in the day, you can get a Rick Sutcliffe pretty early in the season and, cruise from there. But it seems like everyone's likes to wait it out until the last minute. And certainly with the added wild card teams, more teams are going to be in contention just by default, basically, whether they're good or not. So, you'd love to see the Cubs be aggressive and get a Michael Kopech. The White Sox are definitely, well, I can't say definitely, but obviously should be trading that guy with the season they're having and his talent. I think he'd be great on the north side, and there's probably some other guys out there that would be good as well. The Marlins are going to have a fire sale before long too. But, April, there's not too many teams that really start making big deals in April.
Paul, I think you're selling the White Sox short, because if they win their next 17, they'll be back to 500.
Well, this is true. And let's not forget, as Pedro pointed out last night, they did score five runs in the
night. That's right. Hey, that ain't nothing to sneeze at.
You know, yeah, they've almost been no hit twice in a row, but they scored five runs in the ninth inning, and they're almost to 200. And they're playing the Twins this week, and the Twins are under 200 too, so that should be quite a thrilling series there.
I will say this. I gave up on the game. I watched up until the point where they got the first hit in the eighth inning, and I thought, okay, they broke up the no-hitter, and they'll just probably get shut out. I was stunned when I looked the next today and saw that they scored five runs in the ninth. I was impressed.
Yeah, well, Philly put in a pitcher that obviously just needed the work, and then they refused to take him out, and they finally had to take him out. So, I think that was just a matter of let's give this guy some work, and then they're like, oh, no, wait a minute. But, it is a long season and everything, but I don't know what help White Sox fans would have looking at this lineup and without Luis Robert coming back, you know, until around the All-Star break. You got to wonder how long Pedro is going to survive.
Paul, going back to the Cubs rotation, and I know we talked about this a little bit, but there have been some younger guys who have contributed in a big way. Javier Assad clearly has been good. Jordan Wicks has been good. You know, you always love to have lefties in a rotation when you can. Who, if they do, or, you know, Ben Brown too, if they do end up making a move of those three guys, how would you line that up in terms of holding or taking Hendricks' spot if they did make a drastic move like that, or who would be in the bullpen? What would you do with the three of them?
Well, I definitely would give Brown a shot in the rotation. I think Assad is a cinch to be in the rotation the rest of the year, the way he's been pitching. Jordan, he's the one guy that could probably work either way in the bullpen or in the rotation. And, let's not forget Justin Steele's coming back soon. He's, you know, throwing a sim game today, and he'll start his rehab sometime this week. So maybe, I don't know, two starts, three starts. I don't know how long they'll let him go, but he'll be back. So I think rotation wise, they have more depth than I can ever remember for a Cubs team, just with the youth. I think the bullpen is really just the issue right now, what they're going to do with Merriweather out. Cause you know, it was really strange because he's such a quiet guy and unassuming, and you kind of almost don't even notice how good he is. Then now that he's gone, you know, it's a really integral piece of the late inning, puzzle that they're missing. And it's going to be up to council to figure it out. And like I said in the story today, you know, he had pretty easy up in Milwaukee with Hader and Devin Williams for all those years. And now he's got some really big decisions to make.
Paul Sullivan, I always love talking baseball with you. Thank you for taking time today to talk with me. I know it was a long day for you at the ballpark, so I appreciate you being with me today.
Anytime, Raj.
Anytime? You mean that? Anytime?
Anytime. Well, now that you're back in Chicago, are you back for good, or what's the deal?
You know, I'm just filling in. I'm just helping out Matt Spiegel. Must be. Is Spiegs doing pregame today?
No, he's got other things going on this weekend.
Oh, he's got other things going on. Anyway,
okay.
They said, hey,
well, I love going on your show in St. Louis, too. You still have that, right?
Oh, it's still going on, baby.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think you called me last year about the mysterious bullet shooting at Sox Park, as I recall. Some of the wacky theories.
I love that the biggest White Sox storylines are things like they want $1 billion from the state. Somebody got shot at the ballpark. Just really good stuff. Really good stuff nowadays.
All good. It's all good. Gonna be a fun season.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, Ron. See you.
That is Paul Sullivan. He covers Chicago sports baseball for the Chicago Tribune, joining us on the show. Mark Leiter Jr. is scheduled to be with us in the next hour. He's a guy a lot of people want to see as closer. Well, we're going to talk things over with him. This is Hit and Run. I'm Chris Ranji. Thanks for listening to The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.